the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 11th of April, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. I do apologise, this isn't live. I've got a new computer and I'm having a few technical issues with it at the moment, but we will be back live again on Friday. And we do have our usual special guest with us today. As it's Thursday, we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us from rustjournal.org. Matt, good morning to you, sir.
You know, one of my cats, Stanley Jr., is staring me in the face, and he's telling me, now I know we're not going to be talking about this today, but he's telling me that he's convinced that Julian Assange's cat is working for the CIA and he's the problem. That's his opinion. That's his opinion. I mean, he's very politically oriented. So I mean, he's an anarchist, more of a natural, like a Troy Southgate type of cat. But he says that it's Julian's cat that's the problem here. Apparently, he is part of the problem here. So he's not a stupid animal.
Have you seen the state of Julian Assange? I mean, they pulled him out today. They've arrested him. But he looks like he's aged about 10 years in the last 6 months where we haven't seen him. He's lost a lot of hair. He's got a straggly beard. I don't know what they've been doing to him within that embassy, but it's not very nice. As you say, this has only just happened, so we're not really going to be getting into that now. Do you know anything else about it at all before we get into our subject matter for today?
Well, the only thing I have to say off the top of my head, other than Stanley's insight, is that there's definitely a connection between the government of Ecuador turning their backs on him and American pressure on Venezuela. There's no doubt about it, because the new president, Moreno over Carrera, or whatever, or the other way around, whatever it is more or less pro-American compared to his predecessor. And they've all kind of repudiated Venezuela. And I think that has everything to do with this sudden turnabout with respect to Julian Assange, talking about the cat, as the media keeps doing, and his internet connection and stupid things like this. You know, they're covering for something else. And that's, I think there's definitely a connection there.
Who's going to look after his cat now, though? Can we trust
Well, that's the big issue. That's the big issue here.
I don't think they'll let him take the cat with him. I hope he's okay. I really do hope he's going to be all right.
But you're right. The beard struck me. It struck me. He doesn't look. He didn't even look like him in some of the pictures I've seen so far. But maybe if he shaves and it looks a little bit better in the future, you know, I don't know. Maybe he did it on purpose. Maybe he's trying to look like, you know, a sage or something. I don't know. But he did look terrible. I agree with you there. But I would too if I were in his shoes.
At least they appear to have lowered the charges somewhat, because they say that he could get a maximum of 5 years now. So that's better than it was before. I mean, before he was looking at a life sentence. So they have said that he's only looking at a maximum sentence of 5 years if he's found guilty of what they're charging him with. But the issue is that he's, you know, well, the issue will revolve around whether or not he is a journalist. And that's actually quite important for us in the alternative media, because we don't have journalist credentials. I certainly haven't been to journalist school. I'm not a paid up member of the National Union of Journalists. But what we do here is basically citizen journalism. And that's what he was doing. So again, that's going to be another important part of this, I think, that we'll learn more about as the days go on. Anyway, what we're going to be talking about today is the congressional hearings on white nationalism, or the congressional hearing on white nationalism this week. Before we get right into it, did you get a chance to actually watch it, Matt? I think there's a whole 4 hours there.
I've watched parts of it, to be honest with you. I couldn't take some of it. It was so bad. I mean, we know too much about this. And I watched a bit of it on the Red Ice, which is, I think, 5 hours. I listened to the that particularly hideous ADL woman. And that was really about it. I don't have the stomach I used to. But I think the ADL is the prime mover here anyway. So I think that that testimony could be taken more seriously than anybody else. You know, the rest of the parade of idiots is, I think, is far less important than the Anti-Defamation League, because they're by far the most powerful group that was represented there.
Well, I haven't had a chance to watch it. I'm hoping to watch the Red Eye stream over the weekend. I've read lots of reports about it. And the first thing that really strikes me is, where were the white nationalists? If this was going to be an investigation into white nationalism, why wasn't there a white nationalist there to represent white nationalists, to say what their view was on things? Is it just that they can't allow a white nationalist there? Are they too frightened to have a white nationalist there, that the public might actually hear the white nationalist views and realize that in actual fact there's nothing wrong with them? I mean, all white nationalists want is to exist. They just want the white race to continue existing. What is so bad about that? That's the thing that really strikes me. And then you think, well, who did they have there to represent us? Well, the first person they had to represent us was apparently Candace Owens, a black female. We can't even have a white man representing us. And also there was a Zionist Jew there who apparently spoke up for us. So we had a Negress and a Jew that was speaking up for the white nationalists. It's almost as if we live in an occupied country and we're occupied by foreigners. Now, the first one I mentioned, Candace Owens, this is a report from Breitbart. Candace Owens, the communications director with Turning Point USA, said at a House Judiciary Committee hearing on Tuesday that the topic of the hearings, white nationalism, wasn't the true issue, and that the biggest scandal is the Democratic Party's fear-mongering to brown people and keeping minorities as perpetual victims. Owens, who said in her opening remarks that she is a Democrat who supports President Donald Trump, said Democrat policies have harmed blacks. The biggest scandal in American politics is that Democrats have been conning minorities into believing we are perpetual victims, all but ensuring our failure, Owens said. Owens also said the hearing was more about the 2020 election than white nationalism, which he pointed out was much worse in the United States than during the lifetime of her grandfather, who was with her at the hearing. He grew up in an America where words like racism and white nationalism held real meaning under the Democratic Jim Crow laws, Owens said. The hearing today is not about white nationalism or hate crimes, Owens said. It is about fear-mongering, power and control. It's a preview of the Democrats' 2020 strategy. Reparations and white nationalism, Owens said. That is the Democrats' preview. And I believe she also spoke up about Antifa and said that this should really be a hearing into Antifa, and that they are the ones that are responsible for political violence, which is what terrorism is. It's violence against property or people with a political motive. And there really hasn't been that much violence with a political motive that's been attributed to white nationalists. It's always to the Antifa. But I am pleased that she did speak up about that. I think she actually did quite well, even though she is black. What do you think of Candace Owens here, Matt, the way that what she spoke about?
Well, what can we say? She's all we had. So far as why there were no white nationalists there, someone like Richard Spencer, some of these guys could have done well. I could have done well there. Jared Taylor could have done well there. Any of that type could very easily have handled this with no problem. And the bill itself, which I don't have mentioned on here, they have this list of phony statistics and phony incidents. And when you go and search for these so-called hate crimes, none of them are politically motivated. They all are often their drug deals gone bad. They're, you know, turf wars. They're criminal acts having no political or racial configuration to them. So the whole thing is prefaced on fake media. The whole thing is based on the press making up stories and trying to put a racial tinge on something so as to sell more papers or get more viewers or whatever it is and promote their agenda. More than any, you know, dedication to journalism. Now, as far as having no white nationalists there, well, that implies that the U.S. government and the private corporations that finance it have some obligation to be to be objective. Of course, it's an occupied country. I would expect absolutely nothing else. They don't believe that they have any obligation to represent our point of view whatsoever. It is an enemy state and an enemy society and an enemy regime. That's like saying, you know, how come during the kangaroo trials of the late 40s, how come Solzhenitsyn wasn't allowed to testify? You know, that's pretty much the same question. You know, of course they're not going to let him testify. The whole ideology was opposed to everything that he believed. They didn't believe that they had to be objective. They were objectivity. And it's the same thing here. They believe that they are objectivity. And this is what happens when you live in an occupied country where our people have been, at least in the political realm, defeated for a very long time. Apart from that, as I said many times before, we frightened the crap out of them at Charlottesville, and Shelbyville and elsewhere, Pikeville, where we outnumbered the left 2-1 in some cases. And the left being mostly female or feminized, we could have our way with them anytime we wanted. And that's what scared the crap out of them. And that's where this is all coming from, unfortunately. So our victories have turned into this reality on Capitol Hill.
Can they not see that the general public will see that they are not being objective, that they are basically talking about a group of people without one representative from that group of people there to speak up for them? I mean, surely they like to push this idea that there's a democracy, there's equity, everybody has a voice. And yet when they want to attack this one particular group of people, they're not allowed to have a voice. I think that will get more people to be interested in white nationalism and want to actually hear what the white nationalists have to say. And it does seem that there was a lot of talk on YouTube. There were a lot of people making comments on YouTube, and they actually banned comments. They banned comments on the official White House stream. I think they then went on to ban comments on other streams as well. And they were saying that trolls and terrible racist people were abusing the comment system. And I guess the thought never crossed their mind that, well, actually, this is just normal people that can see the hypocrisy here, that are making genuine criticisms of the fact that this was completely biased, that there was no objectivity, there was no sense of fair play, no sense of actually hearing both sides of the debate. I mean, it wasn't a debate. It was just about attacking white people. And I said that there was somebody else that was there that was speaking up for us, and that was a Zionist. This report comes from Yahoo. Next to Owens sat Zionist Organization of America President Morton Klein, who railed against the alleged anti-Semitism of Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar and against the failure of Democratic leaders to condemn her for it. Klein, who briefly made headlines last year for vociferously defending his use of the term filthy Arab, also shouted that Beto O'Rourke's characterization of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as a racist should forever disqualify O'Rourke from holding public office. So he went there and he was saying, well, look, the white nationalists aren't actually the biggest anti-Semites in the country. The biggest anti-Semites in the country are the Muslims. So he was pushing that idea. And this sort of ties in with something that Murdoch pointed out recently, which was we seem to see a lot of Jews saying, well, we're just like you whites, and we're being persecuted by the Muslims as well, and we should be joining up together, which is most bizarre to be seeing this happening. But he did seem as if he was saying, well, why are you going after white nationalists? You should be going after the Muslims. So we've got a Negress and a Jew that are supposedly making excuses for us, and we haven't got any of us in there whatsoever. I mean, it's just not objective at all. The banning of the comments, how do they think the banning of the comments is going to look to the general public that were making those comments? I mean, they're the people that they're going to come for next, aren't they? I mean, this is just the start of going after anybody that dissents or becomes part of the opposition against the New World Order, I think. They come for us first, and it will be the truthers next, and then it will be the people against vaccines, then it will be the vegetarians. You know, it will be going after anybody that is any different from the norm, I think.
Well, that being the case, we do have to have an escape plan, preferably one that has nothing to do with the embassy of Ecuador. But but I think Russia or Belarus makes a lot of sense. Just make sure our passports are up to date and everything else. When I was fired from Mount St. Mary's University, the only guy who stood up for me was Jewish. And I think it's partially because, given their strength in American society, they're not constrained like a lot of the others when it comes to, well, to everyone else, when it comes to issues of basic fairness. But I'll say this again. The Soviet Union said the exact same thing as the American government does. They were democracy incarnate. They were the working class by definition. Therefore, any enemy of theirs is by definition an enemy of democracy, an enemy of the state, an enemy of justice and truth. And the U.S. government is no less ideological than the Soviet Union ever was. And it's the same revolutionary idea, whether it be capitalism or communism. They're both Enlightenment ideologies. They both believe themselves to be the apogee or the zenith of Enlightenment thinking, and that they are not just democratic, but they are democracy. That's the key distinction here. So that's why they can do this. Now, of course, most Americans don't believe that, which is why, I mean, their ideas may be inchoate, but they realize that, you know, they do have to shut down, that they've lost the debate on the comments already, and therefore shutting it down, although that's been kept out of the major press, that is all over the internet, and someone could go on there and see that there's no more comments permitted, and that's so this is already a failure from that point of view. But again, we can't assume that we're talking about a government that deals with alternative voices. It believes it is democracy incarnate, therefore we're opposed to it, and we're opposed to the state as such, and therefore we're opposed to democracy as such, and therefore we have no right to any voice at all. That's the thinking of the elite here. But that's not the thinking of the average person, even the average liberal in many cases.
Well, I think part of this as well is that they would have failed to actually define what white nationalism is. They're conflating it with white supremacy. And they will say that white supremacy is a belief in whites ruling over blacks and executing all the non-white races. And then they will say, and that means the same as white nationalism. And then they will accuse people that are just conservative-minded of them being white nationalists and white supremacists, and then they'll use this legislation that they came up with at the end of it against their enemies. And when you were saying there about all these hoaxes and these hate crime hoaxes that they've conflated together as terrorism, they've also added just general racism in that. Just anybody using a racist word, they said, is the equivalent of a terrorist act. And we've got another editorial here. We had an editorial from Andrew Anglin the other day. We've got another editorial here that's talking about it. And he says, basically, the entire concept of this thing was to call in Jews and the representatives of Jewish groups and demand that white nationalism be made illegal. The theory is that political speech leads to violence. Thus, speech itself is violence. Thus, shut it down. After the sloppy kike Nadler gave a bunch of fake statistics about white people being out there slaughtering black people for no reason, the Republican Congressman Doug Collins got up there and started talking about how white nationalists are no different than Chinese people putting Muslims in concentration camps. He quoted the fake statistics of the ADL about anti-Semitic attacks rising. Those numbers are based on the hoax prank calls from Israel. Shockingly, no one cited the SPLC, possibly because the SPLC abuses black people, unlike white nationalists who don't even do anything to black people or hardly ever talk about them. Almost the entire witness panel was Jewish, and a black woman was brought in to give the defense of white nationalists. The first witness was Eileen Hershinov, an absolutely disgusting Jew from the Anti-Defamation League. She blamed the alt-right for violence and gave more fake statistics. She also blamed social media, then demanded that the government shut down Gab and 8chan. This seems to be a large part of it, is they want to shut down both of those sites. But Gab complies with all the laws. I mean, we've seen this in Britain as well, you know, the mainstream media will just make a big fuss about things and pretend that people have broken the law when they haven't done. And then you end up with the MPs repeating what the mainstream media have said. And I'm thinking in particular of Tommy Robinson, when this Welsh guy drove a van into a Muslim outside of a mosque and he was accused of terrorism. The mainstream media reported the court case as saying he was radicalized by Tommy Robinson's Twitter feed. And Tommy Robinson got hold of the court transcripts, and nowhere was that said that he was radicalised by Tommy Robinson. But the press repeated it, the MPs repeated it in the Houses of Parliament, and now that has become fact. And it seems to me that this is exactly the same thing that's going on here. You've got all these Jewish groups that are claiming that white nationalists want violence, white nationalists want to kill people, and now they've got it all put down into this congressional hearing where it will all be recorded as if it is fact. And then it will go down in history as if that was fact, as if all these hoaxes that they were talking about, as if they were genuine terrorist attacks. This seems to be the way that it works, Matt.
I'm going to say something that's a little bit self-indulgent here, but two weeks ago, I did a broadcast on the hoax of the Chinese putting Muslims in concentration camps. And Doug Collins uses this as the spine of his argument here. I mean, that can't be a coincidence. Obviously this is all and it just goes to show that the power of the media control law, the media control it all, because this is where they're getting their information from. But I can't imagine that this is anything, but it can't be a coincidence, because, the fact that he would use a kind of obscure part of the world, that almost no one knows anything about in this country as the main focal point of his argument. Here doesn't make any sense. The very fact that he would mention this and make this a big deal and somehow connect us to the Chinese, which might not be the worst thing in the world. And he does say the Chinese people, not Chinese government. And I'm telling you, to a great extent, because Republicans are so fanatically pro-Zionist, Democrats a bit less so, but the Republicans may end up being our worst enemies. The fact that what's her name is a Democrat doesn't mean anything. I mean, Candace Owens, that means nothing, because Jim Traficant was one of our best people and he was a Democrat. So the party doesn't mean anything. But using that, and of course the comment about the SPLC, I didn't even notice that myself. But this whole panel, as Englund says, was entirely Jewish, and this Hirschnov, which I had sent you a picture of, because it looks like some of our propaganda. That's how hideous she is. It's almost like they were rubbing our face in what they really look like. How would anyone think that's a good idea to put her on camera? The only reason could be that they're just kind of rubbing our face in it. And now, as far as the Jews, Klein comments, you know, Willis Carter used to make fun of Jared Taylor for thinking that, you know, Jews were a natural ally. I know in the BBC there was an article, or maybe it was The Guardian, that said that, you know, Zionist Jews in Israel are turning towards white nationalism and their fight against the immigration of Jews from Ethiopia and places like that. I don't know if there's any truth to that. I mean, I think there may be a minority that may secretly agree with us. But I think in this case, it all comes down to the fact that the Jews are so powerful that they don't really have to worry about getting into any trouble by defending us. So in my case, the only guy that defended me was a Jew here. The guy that defends us, sort of speak, is a Jew. But when it comes down to it, Candace Owens basically says the Democrats are the real racists. Because of policies that the Democratic Party in the southern states held in the 1870s. So, you know, I mean, if that's going to be the core of her argument, you know, it's good that we had somebody, and the fact that she's black maybe makes it more powerful than if it were one of us.
Well, I'd just like to point out that we're not being anti-Semitic to say that it was a lot of Jews there. I mean, you can look at the pictures, and it is full of Jews. And you've got one Jew on the right, and you've got one Jew on the left, and that reminds me of the Middle Ages. You know, you had Pfefferkorn and Reuchlin in the Middle Ages, which was basically one Converso Jew against one Talmudic Jew. And that was the central happening that everybody was fixated by. And it's the same thing now. And you've got right-wing Jews against left-wing Jews arguing about, what's going to happen to white people. Well, let's have a look at the bill that they've actually come out with, because they came out with a bill at the end of it. And this is, the Senate bill that was introduced, actually on 29th of March this was introduced, and it says this is from section 894. They say hate crimes. In compiling a joint report under this subsection, the domestic terrorism offices authorised under paragraphs 1, 2 and 3 of subsection A shall, in consultation with the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice and the Civil Rights Unit of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, review each hate crime incident reported during the preceding year to determine whether the incident also constitutes a domestic terrorism related incident. So I guess they're going to redefine what domestic terrorism is, if they're going to say that hate crimes are now terrorism. Section 5, training to combat domestic terrorism. A, required training and resources. The Secretary, the Attorney General and the Director shall review the anti-terrorism training and resource programs of their respective agencies that are provided to federal, state, local and tribal law enforcement agencies, including the state and local anti-terrorism program that is funded by the Bureau of Justice, assistance of the Department of Justice, and ensure that such programs include training and resources to assist state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies in understanding, detecting, deterring, and investigating acts of domestic terrorism and white supremacist and neo-Nazi infiltration of law enforcement agencies. The domestic terrorism training shall focus on the most significant domestic terrorism threats as determined by the quantitative analysis in the joint report required under Section 4B. Now, I think this is in response to when Donald Trump took office, Matt, and he said that he was going to stop the funding for the subversion of white supremacist groups and white nationalist groups. And I think what they're trying to do here is get funding for that again by redefining it as terrorism. What do you think of these two things here, Matt? This reviewing each hate crime as terrorism and diverting all this money towards it.
Well, the key word is review. Now, this was written by the Anti-Defamation League. They've had model legislation like this floating around for decades. I have the feeling that the FBI has been working with, or the Justice Department as a whole, has been working with the ADL for many, many years, and the SPLC too for many years. So I have the feeling that the ADL is going to be the ones that they go to, in the press in general, as far as defining what constitutes a hate act. I refuse to believe they're just going to take it upon themselves to decide these things. They're going to go to people who, in fact, it says a bit later on, people who are expert in these subjects, and there's what we'll call, who, you know, who's better than the ADL from that point of view. So I have the feeling that that's really what this comes down to. This was written by them, and this is about them. And they're going to go to them as far as definitions, as far as what constitutes one of these acts, how to define it, and how to deal with it. So this is very, very bad for us. The only possibility we have is that if the FBI decides on their own to do this, to go about, you know, what constitutes an act, that may be better for us than just simply relying on the ADL, which I have the feeling is what they're going to do.
Well, look at the wording of this, neo-Nazi infiltration. Where's the definition of neo-Nazi? I mean, it's just what the ADL call people. So, I mean, it says it there, neo-Nazi infiltration. So who is going to define what a neo-Nazi is? And they'll say again, oh, a neo-Nazi will be somebody that wants to kill all the non-whites. And then the ADL will point to somebody who's against abortion, say, and say, he's a neo-Nazi and he's working in the police force. And you need to go after him. It's a bit like as if they were to go to the far right as an expert on Muslims in a Muslim trial. And we'll just get the far right in as the experts. They keep getting the far left in as experts in the trials that we have over here against nationalists. And it's people that have support of Antifa on their Twitter feed. And they're actually brought in as experts. We've got a Section 6 here. Combating domestic terrorism through joint terrorism task forces and fusion centers. A, in general, the joint terrorism task forces of the FBI and state, local and regional fusion centers, as established under Section 210A of the Homeland Security Act of 2002, shall each, in coordination with the Domestic Terrorism Executive Committee and the Domestic Terrorism Offices, share intelligence to address domestic terrorism activities. 2. Conduct an annual intelligence-based assessment of domestic terrorism activities in their jurisdictions. And 3. Formulate and execute a plan to address and combat domestic terrorism activities in their jurisdictions. I mean, basically, they're demanding that the FBI come up with a plan to stop white nationalism there. And then they've got Section 7, the Interagency Task Force. No later than 180 days after the date of the enactment of this act, the Attorney General, the Director, the Secretary, and the Secretary of Defense shall establish an interagency task force to combat white supremacist and neo-Nazi infiltration of the uniformed services. So they're demanding that there be a special task force be created specifically to go after who the ADL say are neo-Nazis, and the FBI have got to formulate a plan to shut it down, basically. That's what they're saying, isn't it?
This is now at the beginning of this. This is just the Senate bill. That's what the S means. There, as far as I know, there's no House bill yet. And the way that the American system works, both House and Senate have to agree to a unified bill in conference committee, and then that goes to the president. So ultimately, this is going to go up if it continues to go forward. And of course, there's going to be committee hearings here. This is just the beginning. There's going to be subcommittee hearings, and there's going to be hearings for a while. This takes a long time. And so who knows? Maybe some of our people will get called on. Maybe some of our mainstream people will get called on. I don't know. I doubt it, though. But this comes from the Homeland Security Act of 2002, which is based on 9/11. So that fraud is at the root of all of this, even though now there's a grand jury talking about controlled demolitions of the New York City incident. So who knows where that's going to go. So this depends. And I don't know of all the guys in this movement I don't know any of them who are wearing a uniform. So I have no idea what they're talking about. They're trying to create this fear that the neo-Nazis, whatever that is, are infiltrating the police department and the Army and the Marine Corps, and they're going to start shooting blacks for no reason. That's essentially what this comes down to, and that's what the mentality seems to be here completely.
Well, I think that, you know, they're just going to go after people that are conservative-minded, that are in the police or in the Army, probably maybe even go after Christians. That's what it seems to me. That seems to be what this is all about. I mean, I would like to see somebody like, why haven't we got David Duke or Jared Taylor or Kevin McDonald or Richard Spencer, any of these people speaking up and saying, look, speak to us about this. And because they can't stand to have that. And I've noticed that they are conflating neo-Nazi, white supremacist, and white nationalist all together. Like, all those things, that there's no difference between them. And that started with Facebook the other week. They said there's no difference between them, so we're going to ban all of them. And if you look at Wikipedia, they're trying to do this as well. They link all the pages together, and they say that neo-Nazis and white nationalists, they all just want to execute non-whites, and they want to drive them all from the lands, and that's what an ethno-state is. It means you've got to execute all the non-whites. And it's all absolute BS. No white nationalists talk about that. It's so that they can label white nationalists as being white supremacists and genocidal maniacs. I mean, I've even heard them try to say that white genocide means genociding the non-whites. No, white genocide is what's being done to white people at the moment. We're being put under conditions that are calculated to remove us from our homes and replace us and replace our children. That's what a genocide is. And they've been pushing all this together. So they must have known that they were actually going to be bringing this bill out, I would say, before this actual attack took place in New Zealand. This must have been a plan that they had, and they just seized on the fact that there was this mosque massacre, and now's the right time to bring this forward, and now's the right time to push this idea that white nationalists are genocidal maniacs, and they're white supremacists, and they're neo-Nazis. And it's just really just a way of smearing the political opposition and smearing all the alternative journalists that deal with this sort of stuff. And it's a way for the ADL and organizations like them to use the forces of law and order as their attack dogs. You know, it's the same as in the Soviet Union when they made anti-Semitism into a capital offense. It's so that they can use the police to silence their enemies, basically.
And that's what it comes down to. And I think they're playing with fire in that respect. So the minimum we can do right now is write a substantial document that sent to the Trump administration, or even the Judiciary Committee for that matter, simply giving our point of view, even though we probably will do nothing, but at least there's a document out there that explains the fraudulence of these so-called incidents and everything else. We have to communicate with these people. And despite the fact they won't admit it, they'll probably read it. And well, there will be at least spread some doubt about the whole thing. I mean, at a minimum.
Well, if it was sent by a group of people with letters after their name, you know, that might stand a chance of actually being read by them. And if you got Professor Kevin McDonald, you know, you're a doctor, Greg Johnson, he's Dr. Greg Johnson. There must be a few other professors and doctors that we've got in the movement that could get something together and sign it and say, we refute this. We reject being lumped in with all of this, and we reject violence. I think that's a good idea, Matt. That's definitely a good idea. Maybe some of the people that listen to this might talk to those people I mentioned then, and maybe they'll try and get something together. Okay, Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.